I get home late, and I'm tired. Ready to go to sleep. I'd just been in Beaumont for my sister's graduation. This was the first weekend, by the way. This was my first weekend in Houston. So I moved to Houston that week of June, whatever, June the 3rd. But that was my first weekend in Houston. And I went back home because my sister graduated from high school. And if you know me, I guess that's sort of a big deal for me because I don't like graduations. I don't like going to other people's graduations. I didn't like going to my own graduation. The only reason I went to my graduation is because my mom killed me across the state. Because I was this close to walking out. As a matter of fact, whenever I got to the graduation, they gave me a number. And my number was 409. And if you know anything about Beaumont and the Golden Triangle area, the area code for phone numbers is 409. So I was like, cool, yeah, they know my area code. And someone was like, no, Ruben, that's what number in line you are. I was like, there's at least 409 people get graduated? Like, I'm about to leave. Because I don't like waiting. That was my thing. I don't like sitting down, waiting for 3 hours while people walk across the stage. So, but I did it. I went to my sister's graduation, and that was a good time. And like I said, I come back home here to Houston, get to my apartment. It's late. I'm tired, lazy. So I just go to sleep, and I've got services the next day because the graduation is on Saturday. So I've got services the next day, so I have to get up early. So I go to sleep, and then I guess it's around 3 o'clock in the morning. By the way, you know, for the kids, you know, parents always say nothing good happens after 11. That's pretty much true. So I'll give you a little insight about what we're talking about today. That's pretty much true. So I go to sleep. I think it's around 10 or 11. And I wake up. I think I had to turn my mic on. But I wake up because I hear something. Yeah, it's off. Something wakes me up at around 3 o'clock in the morning, and it's the sound of my balcony door breaking, a glass on my balcony door breaking. So I get up, I get out of bed, I try and see what's going on. It sounds like people are on my balcony. So I look for my gun. I'm a criminal justice major, I'm a big gun guy, so I have guns, and they are loaded. So I look around for my gun, and I can't find it. I'm like, where did I put my gun? This is not a good situation. I'm like, uh-oh. So I'm looking around for my gun. It's dark. I can't see anything. I check, you know, over here. No, that's not it. It's not there. I check over here. No. I make my way into the kitchen. Boom. It's sitting there on the kitchen counter, not where it's supposed to be. And I had to turn a light on so I could see and everything. And by the time I'm focused on the door and where the glass had broken, I see the shadow of a guy, like, jumping off my balcony. And that guy, I mean, he's got some guts because I'm on the second floor. So, yeah, he jumped off of my balcony. So, I don't know what happened for sure, but someone tried to break in to my apartment my first weekend in Houston. That was a sign for me. I went back home. No, I did. Obviously, I didn't. I didn't go back home. I stayed. I was thinking, man, does God want me here? I don't know. But that's what happened. That's what happened. I ended up, after this incident, I called my friend Donald. I actually called him on accident. You know how you pocket dial someone or something along those lines. I called him on accident, and he actually calls me back because I wake him up. He's a preacher also. He's an intern at the Spring Creek congregation in Plano, Texas. And he calls me back. He was like, hey, man, what's up? You know, it's late. We got services in the morning. I was like, yeah, no, I accidentally called you, man. Someone tried to break into my apartment, and I just called the police, so I must have accidentally called you. And he's like, oh, man, that's not good. So he stays on the phone with me. He's like, I'll just stay on the phone with you until the police arrive. So he does, and we talk about some things. And I actually tell him, I was like, you know, Donald, there is a sermon in this example somewhere. There's a sermon in this example, and I'm going to find it. And honestly, by the time I was done with that phone call, I did find a sermon in that example, and I titled it Lessons Learned at 3 o'clock in the morning. And truly, there is a lesson. There's a lesson in my experience. Don't feel bad about me, by the way. I took it lightly. It's everything turned out fine. The apartment replaced the door and everything, so that's fine. But there are lessons to learn with what happened to me, and I'm turning in my Bible to 1 Thessalonians chapter 5. So you turn with me to 1 Thessalonians chapter 5, and we're going to read verses 1 and 2 together. 1 Thessalonians chapter 5, we're going to start reading from verse 1. Paul says, "Now as to the times and epochs, brethren, you have no need of anything to be written to you, for you yourselves know full well that the day of the Lord will come just like a thief in the night." This is what we're going to talk about here this morning. I had some experience with thieves in nighttime, so hopefully we can learn something together through my experience that I went through on June 3rd of last year. So that's what we're going to talk about. Paul here, he reminds us that the day of the Lord comes, and it's going to be coming a time where no one knows. So we're going to look at some lessons that we can learn from my experience at 3 o'clock in the morning. So, first of all, what's one of the lessons that we can learn for me at 3 o'clock in the morning? First of all, complacency can be dangerous. And I mentioned in the story, and whenever I got home that night, I was just tired. I was ready to go to sleep, right? I wasn't ready, in a sense. As a matter of fact, I didn't think anyone was going to break in. I'd never had someone break into my house before. I didn't think it was going to happen. As a matter of fact, I truly didn't think it would happen that night. But it did. It happened, right? Someone did break into my apartment, and it didn't happen to someone over there or someone or that neighbor over there. It happened to me. I was complacent. I was lazy. And that's dangerous. You know, you talk to law enforcement people or military people, and they'll tell you, you know, I told some of you this, but I'm a criminal justice major. I graduated with a Bachelor of Science in Criminal Justice, so I did internships at the police department, which was fun because, you know, they let you shoot. I won Top Shot, by the way. So, yeah, me and one other guy won Top Shot. We were the best shooters in our internship. But one of the things that police officers or military personnel will tell you is that one of the most dangerous things, one of the things that will get you hurt in that line of work is complacency, right? You're just thinking it's the same old, over and over again. This is your millionth traffic stop, and all of your other traffic stops went fine, so you're just complacent. And then something happens, right? That can be dangerous because complacency is dangerous. And that's not just true of when things happen and when people break into your house at night. That's not just true for the police officers or for the military people who are out on patrol. It's not just true for them. It's true for us spiritually. Complacency can be dangerous. Let's look at verse 3. We're pretty much going to be in 1 Thessalonians. If you want, put your bookmark there because we're going to be turning back here quite frequently. Chapter 5 and verse 3, it says, "While they are saying peace and safety, then destruction will come upon them suddenly, like labor pains upon a woman with child, and they will not escape." See, Paul is saying when they're complacent, that's when the trouble is going to happen. Paul tells us that complacency can cause death, can cause spiritual death. And I've seen this, you know, I've seen this in a number of people's lives. I've seen it in my life. This attitude that says, look, I've got plenty of time. I'm young and invincible. I've got plenty of time to live my life. And the Lord surely isn't going to come back today, right? He didn't come back yesterday or the day before that or all those days before that. So surely he's not going to come back today. You see, I've seen this attitude of complacency, and it's just dangerous. You know, James tells us in the book of James, and we don't know when our time is going to be. As a matter of fact, he warns us about that. Just making plans without thinking about the Lord. He tells us our life is like a vapor, right? It comes and goes. It's short. We don't know what's going to happen in our lives. I mentioned in the last sermon a young lady who, and we still don't know what happened, but she died. And she, young lady, she left behind her family, you know. I think there was a time in all of our lives where we thought we were young and invincible. You know, whenever I was young, I used to drive like 200 miles an hour. Why do we do that? Well, because nothing can happen to us. Sometimes we can have that attitude spiritually, and it's an attitude that's dangerous because we don't know when our time's going to be, and one day the Lord is going to come back just like the thief at night, right? So one of the things that we need to understand is that complacency can be dangerous. But that's not all. Another thing that we need to understand is readiness is our defense. If complacency is dangerous, how do we combat that? Well, we've got to be ready. You know, whenever I sort of retrace my steps that night of when that happened, you know, I looked for my gun. I think I looked for it in a couple of places over here on my dresser. It wasn't there. On my ironing board, not there either. Eventually, I made my way to the kitchen and I found it, but I retraced my steps, and I want to say it took me something like 10 seconds, 7 to 10 seconds to find it. That's like an eternity when something like that is happening, right? You know, that it seemed like such a long time, and the thing is, I wasn't ready, right? I was not ready. And readiness is our defense. We've got to be ready at all times. Nowadays, whenever I go to sleep, I put my gun next to me, so I am ready just in case that happens again. I know it's very unlikely that something like that is going to happen again. You know, the odds are pretty astronomical, but you got to be ready, right? And that's not only true of me in my house prepping for, you know, someone who breaks in. That's true of us in our spiritual lives. We have to be ready. Let's skip down to verse 6 of 1 Thessalonians chapter 5. We're going to come back to those other verses, but let's skip down to verse 6. Paul says, "So then, let us not sleep as others do, but let us be alert and be sober." Here, Paul urges us to be alert and sober. And in other words, he's saying, we need to make sure we're ready. Why? Because the Lord is coming back, and he could cost us eternal life. You know, I think of the parable of the 10 virgins. Do you remember what happens in that parable in Matthew chapter 25? In this story, these virgins, they some virgins had their oil, and they had enough oil, they were ready for the return, right? But other, as a matter of fact, let's read it. Matthew chapter 25, starting at verse 1. Jesus is saying, the kingdom of heaven will be comparable to 10 virgins who took their lamps and went out to meet the bridegroom. 5 of them were foolish, and 5 were prudent. For when the foolish took their lamps, they took no oil with them. But the prudent took oil and flasks along with the lamps, and now while the bridegroom was delaying, they all got drowsy and began to sleep. But at midnight there was a shout, "Behold, the bridegroom, come out to meet him." Then all those virgins rose and trimmed their lamps. The foolish said to the prudent, "Give us some of your oil, for our lamps are going out." But the prudent answered, "No, there will not be enough for us and you too. Go instead to the dealers and buy some for yourselves." And while they were going away to make the purchase, the bridegroom came, and those who were ready went in with him to the wedding feast, and the door was shut. So here we see the parable of the 10 virgins. 5 of them were ready. They had their oil. By the way, the oil lamps, I went to Israel in February, and that's a great trip if you had the chance. It's not super expensive because no one really goes to Israel, so my plane ticket, like, you know, typically you go overseas and you're looking over $1,000 for a plane ticket. My plane ticket was under, I think it was under $800 for Israel. But yeah, it's a great trip if you go with someone. I know there's a guy at our congregation who goes every year, and he's a good tour guide because he's been like 15 times. So, but it's great, and I got to see those oil lamps, so that kind of put it in perspective of what the type of lamp that they were carrying. And some of these virgins were ready, and some of them were not. And look at how the bridegroom, responds in verse 11. Later, the other virgins came, saying, "Lord, Lord, open up for us." But he answered, "Truly I say to you, I do not know you. Be on alert then, for you do not know the day or the hour." You see, if we're going to be ready for the day that the Lord, or if we... I was about to say, if we're going to be ready for the day that the Lord comes, we need to be ready, but that's redundant. We need to be ready for the day that the Lord comes, because if complacency is dangerous, then readiness is our defense. And that's another lesson that I learned at 3 o'clock that morning. But another lesson, let's talk about another one. We're going quick here. I told you guys in Bible class, my sermons are typically short. We're moving a little quicker than the last sermon, so that's good. The next lesson we learned is that light brings direction. On that night, I had a hard time seeing. You know, I needed the light to see my gun. I needed the light to guide my way, or else I would stumble, fall, and hurt myself. So I turned the light on, right? Because light indeed brings direction. But notice with me that light also brings direction in our spiritual lives. Let's go back to those verses that we skipped in 1 Thessalonians chapter 5, verses 4 and 5, please. 1 Thessalonians chapter 5, verses 4 and 5, it says, "But you, brethren, are not in darkness, that the day would overtake you like a thief, for you are all sons of light and sons of day. We are not of night nor of darkness." So here Paul is using light in a figurative sense. He says we're sons of light. But what does light mean figuratively? Have you ever thought about that? In college and in high school, I believe, we read this play called A Streetcar Named Desire. Anybody read that or maybe seen the movie? I think they made a movie. It's an older play. And in this play, there's a character named Blanche. And she does not like the light at all. Blanche, whenever she walks into a room that's too bright, she'll complain about the light. Maybe she'll put like a lampshade over it. Whenever she's out on a date, if it's too bright, she'll try and find somewhere where it's a little bit darker, right? She doesn't like the light at all. And the author of A Streetcar Named Desire, I believe Tennessee Williams is the author of A Streetcar Named Desire, he creates this character and he's using light in a figurative way. And I'm sure you guys are picking up on it, but the idea behind Blanche is she's fake. She's a fake person. When people ask her age, she lies about it. And that's part of the reason why she likes the darkness a little bit. She doesn't want people to see her, you know, how she really is. So when people ask her age, she lies about it. She lies about her past. You know, she did some questionable things in her past. She's trying to lead a fake life and deceive other people. That's the idea behind light in literature. Light reveals reality. Light reveals truth. And the fact of the matter is, we need that in our life. We need light that shows us the truth. We need light that brings direction into our life. It's interesting because the Apostle John, he uses light in a similar way. John chapter 1. John chapter 1 and verse 9, he's talking about Jesus in this context. In John chapter 1 and verse 9, he says, "There was the true light, which coming into the world enlightens every man." And here he's talking about Jesus being the light. And the idea behind the light is it directs us. It reveals truth. It reveals reality. You see, if we're going to be ready for the day of judgment, for when the Lord comes, for when the Lord comes like a thief in the night, we need the light in our lives. We need the truth in our lives. You know what amazes me sometimes? People want the truth in like every part of their lives, right? Almost, anyway. People want the truth in every part of their lives. When you get on a plane, by the way, I use plane examples a lot because I am a huge aviation geek. So I like to use examples of planes whenever I can. But whenever you get on a plane, you want the guy who looks at you and says, "Hey, I'm the pilot." You want him actually to be the pilot, right? You don't want him lying to you. No, he's really the garbage man or something. You don't want, right? He's the janitor. No, you want that guy to be a pilot. He says he's a pilot, you want him to be a pilot. We want the truth in our lives. You go to the doctor and you're a perfectly healthy human being and they say, "Oh, you've got a terminal disease." No, that's not what we want. Send kids to school, we want them learning 2 plus 2 equals 4, not 2 plus 2 equals 5, right? We want the truth in every other area of our lives, except for religion, I think, sometimes, or morality, right? When it comes to moral things, well, that's where truth is subjective. That's where there is no universal or absolute truth, is what people will say. "Oh, you believe what you believe, and I'm just going to believe what I believe, and you know, you have your truth, and I have my truth, because truth is an absolute." You know, when people say, "Well, you know, Reuben, there is no absolute truth," you know how to respond? I just say, "Well, is that absolutely true?" All right? Because it doesn't make sense, does it? They're claiming to have an absolute truth while saying there's no absolute right. So we need truth in our lives. And some people don't like that religiously. Some people don't want a moral truth. But we need truth. We've got to have the light in our lives. So that's another lesson that I learned. I learned that complacency can be dangerous. Readiness is our defense. Light brings direction. But I also learned that godly friends do make a difference. You know, I mentioned earlier that I talked to my friend Donald, and he called me back, and I'm glad he called me back because we had a good conversation. You know, I don't have I don't have PTSD or anything from what happened. And partly that may be because I just have good friends. You know, the next day, I sent that picture that I showed you guys of the door. I sent that picture to a group of my friends, and we're all separated now. Like, my best friend Alex lives in Dallas. A couple of our friends, they live over in Crosby. Donald, he lives up in Plano. So we're all separated. So I sent them a group message on Facebook. And I said, someone tried to break into my apartment. And one of my friends sent this back. She was like, I guess this was you, huh? Because I have an AR-15. So she like drew a picture of me holding a gun saying, hands up. And then someone trying to break in. It was just, you know, just a funny little thing, you know. She just sent it back. And you learn that godly friends do make a difference in our lives as far as our walk with Christ goes. You know, it doesn't only apply to when stuff like this happens. Yeah, godly friends are good for when things in life happens. You know, whenever you get married, it's good to have good friends. Whenever you want to go to the movies, it's good to have good friends. But you know what? Whenever you're walking with Christ, it's good to have godly friends also. You know, one of the things that I've noticed just living the short life that I've lived is that when I stumble, godly friends are there to pick me up, right? It's going to be very hard to get to heaven alone. And I don't think God really expects that of us. In Luke 14, Jesus talks about discipleship a little bit. And in Luke 14, he says, whoever does not carry his cross and come after me cannot be my disciple. I find it interesting that Jesus says this, but I also find it interesting that Jesus needed help carrying his own cross. You ever think about that? We're required to sacrifice and carry our cross for Christ. But Christ needed help carrying his cross. We're going to need help carrying our cross also. You know, one of the things I've noticed also is that I've had a lot of friends who've fallen away from the Lord. And one of I'm not going to say one of the common elements, but the common element in all of them is their friends, right? Maybe they met this girl or boy that they started dating, and that girl or boy was not a Christian and just sort of dragged them away. Or maybe they're just hanging out with the wrong people. Usually it's that friends influence their lives. The fact of the matter is we need godly friends if we're going to be successful in a walk with Christ. We do. 1 Corinthians 15 and verse 33, you guys know what it says. Do not be deceived. Evil company corrupts good morals, right? Right? It's interesting that sometimes we remember the evil company corrupts good morals part. Sometimes we forget the do not be deceived part because sometimes we deceive ourselves. You know, I had a friend say, who would say that, you know, if I'm going to reach people, then I need to be like them. Right, I need to do the things that they're doing, and I don't think she's as strong spiritually as she was whenever I first met her. I mean, she's still post religious things, but I've seen a decline in spirituality there, and that's because we deceive ourselves into thinking, man, I can change everybody. I think for the most part, godly or worldly people, if we're hanging out with a lot of worldly people, they change us. It's the other way around. We need to make sure that we're not deceiving ourselves, thinking I'm too strong and they're never going to change me. That's pride from Satan. I believe Satan tempts us with that. So, godly friends make a difference in our walk with Christ. And these are the lessons I learned. If we're going to be ready for the day of the Lord, for when the thief comes, then we got to make sure that we're not complacent. Why? Because complacency is dangerous. We need to make sure that we are ready, because readiness is our defense. We need to make sure that we have the light, the truth in our lives, because that directs us. And we need to make sure that we have godly friends who can help us out, because we stumble sometimes and we need people to help us up. And godly friends do make a difference. And I have one more point, and this point is just in conclusion. And that point is that life is on the line. You know, when those people, there were three guys, by the way. There were three guys who tried to break into my house. The police officers came and they were like, yeah, one of your neighbors said they saw three people jumping off your balcony. I was like, okay. But the idea is life's on the line. You know, that night, life was on the line. Something could have happened. One of them could have got shot. I don't know if they had guns or not. Something could have happened. Life's on the line. And the same is true of us as spiritually. Eternal life is on the line. So maybe there is someone here this morning who realizes that they haven't been living right. They haven't been living according to God's will. Can I encourage you to come back? Because we don't know when the Lord's coming. It comes like a thief in the night. And we've got to be ready for that. So I encourage you to come back. But maybe there's someone here who hasn't entered into a relationship with Christ yet, who hasn't been baptized into his death to walk in newness of life. If you haven't done that, then why are you waiting? Whatever you need, you can come now as we stand.